like I could talk to you for hours, telling you stories about how so many of us have experienced life and hope and despair and joy and abuse and beauty and survival and finally flourishing, because and in spite of all of it, you would understand, because you have your stories too.
Hey guys, and welcome to Letters from the Lunchroom, a podcast by Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge. Communities and Schools is a nationwide nonprofit which connects students and their families to local resources in order to remove barriers so that they will have greater success in school and in life. During this podcast, we talk to people who have a relationship with this organization, from students to staff members and alumni to volunteers. We know that people who connect with nonprofits have a story that led them there, and we want to know that story. Last week, we released episode 0, which is a great introduction to this series. It explains who Communities and Schools is in greater detail and what you can expect from this podcast. And I also share a little bit more about myself. As for today's episode, I'm really excited about this guest. I mentioned in episode 0 that I work for Communities and Schools of Mid-America. I've actually worked for this organization for quite a while and was really stoked when they agreed to let me start a podcast. Today's guest is the one who gave me that green light to get Letters from the Lunchroom up and running. In fact, she is the essential piece of what makes CIS of Mid-America such a great organization. Without her leadership and guidance, this organization would not be what it is today. That's right. Today, we're talking with the CEO and president of CIS of Mid-America, Melissa Martin. We will talk with her about the evolution of CIS of Mid-America, as well as her own journey through the world of nonprofits. And since CIS is an organization that is focused on being all in for kids, all of our guests have been asked to write a letter to the students that we serve, which they will read on air. Stay tuned for more on this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. Melissa, welcome to the lunchroom. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Hello, and thanks for having me.
I'm so glad that you're here and that you're on our first episode. Would you please take a minute to introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, I'm Melissa Martin, and I am the president and CEO of Communities and Schools of Mid-America, and I have the amazing, incredible privilege of doing this work every day alongside people like Victoria and a whole crew of people who have dedicated their lives to the kids and families we serve.
Excellent. So one of the things that I wanted to kind of start with was, have you ever been on a podcast before?
I have never been on a podcast before.
So the first podcast that you get to be on is one that is with your organization. How does that feel?
It feels exciting. It feels honestly like it is a very natural part of the evolution of this organization. This organization has really changed a lot. It has grown a lot. And this feels like such an amazing next step. We have so much on our horizon, and the podcast and a lot of the other things that we are doing in terms of bringing awareness about the work we do and who we do that work with. There's a lot coming, and this feels like the perfect entrance into all of that.
Well, I love hearing that because, as you know, this is a project that I am very excited that we are starting here in our organization, and I'm just really thrilled that I get to be the person that gets to do a lot of it. So thank you for that. This is our very first episode, though. So for anybody listening, welcome to the very first episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. That does mean that this is the guinea pig episode. So, you know, forgive us as we kind of iron out some kinks, but I'm very excited for what we have planned with this podcast and with this particular episode and talking with Melissa. I'm so excited to hear from her, to hear her letter, to learn more about her history, and to kind of learn exactly what it was that brought her to connect with nonprofits in the first place. But I do want to say thank you, Melissa, for agreeing to be our first guest, knowing that this is the guinea pig episode.
Happy to be the guinea pig.
Okay, so let's take some time and get to know a little bit more about you. If you would, why don't you talk about your history with nonprofits? What got you started with them in the first place?
Well, you know, I would like to say that I always knew that this is what I wanted to do. That's not really the case. Although I will say, you know, when I was 12, I desperately wanted to go work for the Peace Corps somewhere in Africa, preferably. And so I wrote to the Peace Corps because that's how you did things back then. I wrote a letter on notebook paper and put it in an envelope with a stamp and sent it in and let them know that I was ready and available if they could just tell me where I needed to go and, you know, what I needed to do to be in the Peace Corps. And so about 8 weeks later, I got a letter back. It was a really nice letter where they explained that they didn't really send 12-year-olds off into the wild to work for the Peace Corps, but that they really hoped that I would consider the Peace Corps when I was older. Well, by the time I was older, I hadn't forgotten that, but I did have some other things that interested me. And so I spent a while, working for my family, working for myself, creating really a career in the for-profit world, although I always remained connected to ways to meet needs. So I volunteered, I helped when asked with projects that supported folks in the community I lived in. But certainly my career, my profession was not in the nonprofit arena. And then I reached a place where I thought, I don't want to do what I'm doing anymore. I want what I do to make a bigger difference in the world. There was nothing wrong with the work I was doing, but I just could no longer forget, I guess, the 12-year-old who wanted to join the Peace Corps as a way to help the world. And so I began thinking about how I could make the transition from the for-profit world to the nonprofit world. And so I decided to take a part-time job with a nonprofit so that when I was ready to take the big step to full-time, I could say I had some bona fide nonprofit employment experience in addition to volunteer experience. And so I took a $10 an hour, 10-hour a week clerk position in the development department of an organization called Communities and Schools of Houston that I had never heard of, but it seemed like they did good things for kids, and I thought I was going to get some really relevant experience that I could use when I went and got my quote-unquote real nonprofit job.
So wait a minute. Hold on a second. Can I interrupt you here? So you're telling me the very first nonprofit job that you took was with Communities and Schools?
Indeed it was.
Oh my goodness.
Didn't know that, huh?
No.
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. Okay, please continue.
I was there those 10 hours a week, and I was doing perhaps some of the dullest work that could be done, like filling out forms and, filing and things like that. But all around me were people talking about the mission of the organization. And I was hearing incredible stories about this kid and this thing that happened for them and this family and how the organization was able to help them in a time of crisis and how this kid, born to a crack addicted mom had grown up and was now in an Ivy League university and that kind of thing. And I would, I'm a good listener, I like to think. And so I was hearing things that really began to capture me. And at about 6 months in, I realized I didn't want to go get my real nonprofit job somewhere else. I wanted it to be at CIS of Houston. And so I talked to my boss at the time and let her know that, change of perspective here. Instead of feeling like I'm going to leave here in about 9 months to go get something else, if there's something here, I'm interested. And fortunately, a lot of things aligned and coincided. They had a full-time position for me as a grant writer. I stepped into that, and honestly, I took off running. I never looked back. 7 years after, well, actually, I guess 5.5 years after starting as that, you know, lowly 10-hour a week clerk, I was the director of resource development for the organization. And it turned out that moving to the nonprofit arena was one of the very best decisions that I've ever made.
Oh, wow. Well, we're also very glad that you did. So what was it that then changed that brought you to the communities and schools organization that you're the network that you're currently in? Because I know that it wasn't always called Communities and Schools of Mid-America.
Right.
So, yeah. Tell me about what happened with your piece in that.
Well, so while I was living in Houston, my family had an opportunity to move to Lawrence, Kansas, and we took it. And so that meant I had to give up my position with CIS of Houston, which, while I was very excited about our move, for one thing, I was moving to a place with no traffic. You know, I was also really reluctant to leave behind the kind of work I was doing. So then it occurred to me that, well, you know, I've learned a lot in my time here, and I also had relevant experience from my for-profit career. Maybe I could be a consultant to communities and schools affiliates around the country. And then that's exactly what ended up happening. So when I left Houston, when the moving truck left for Lawrence, Kansas, I already had 4 different consulting contracts with CIS affiliates in various places in Texas. So I thought that was going to be a perfect way to keep my involvement with CIS going and keep me in the nonprofit arena, but still allow, you know, our family to make this move. Well, what ended up happening is that the consulting business then expanded outside of Texas, and I consulted with CIS in North Carolina, and then I got a call from what was then Communities and Schools of Kansas to consult with that organization. And so we were preparing to, we were working on some various, information to include in the consulting contract. And it was a very small organization at the time. It essentially had 2 half-time employees. And I learned that both of those employees were leaving and that there was a single position open to take over the organization Communities and Schools of Kansas. And I immediately applied for it. I had really enjoyed the consulting, but I felt so far removed from the work. And so this felt like a way to continue my association with this nonprofit that I loved so much and be closer to the work. So I applied for the job, and very fortunately, I got the job. And I have been at the helm ever since. When I started, it was me in a back bedroom of my house. We had about $85,000 a year of funding, and it was Communities and Schools of Kansas. So there have been a lot of changes in the intervening 11 years, but that's how I landed here.
And so whenever you first started back in the day with Communities and Schools of Kansas, did you ever envision it becoming what it is today?
Oh, no, not at all. And quite honestly, the organization was struggling in a way that I really hadn't understood when I was interviewing for the position. And so it became pretty apparent to me that not long, you know, once I had been hired and was in place, that I had some serious work to do in terms of first creating sustainability financial sustainability for the org.
Oh, wow. So now, you know, you have been with Communities and Schools. You mentioned earlier, it'll be 20 years next year?
20 years next year with the organization overall. And I just celebrated 11 years with this organization.
Yes. With congrats to that. We are so excited to have you, you know, as our leader for the past 11 years. And we hope that, you know, that continues on for quite a few more years.
Me too.
So tell me, what is your favorite part of working with CIS of Mid-America?
Oh, boy. I hope that in some ways it goes without saying that ultimately it is the opportunity to be a part of the lives of the kids and families with whom we work. So prefacing my answer with that being an absolute given that permeates every single thing I do here, I honestly have to say that our staff is the best staff I have ever worked with in any setting, anywhere. And it's not just the best because of their professional caliber and expertise, which are mighty, but because we have relationships, we are colleagues in such a way that honestly makes coming to work every day a joy. You know, everyone's professional life, you know, carries with it frustrations and challenges and days that you go home and you feel like there's not a single ounce of energy left. That, you know, all of that is true. And the opportunity to work with my colleagues in this organization in every facet of the organization is a gift to me that I am daily, daily thankful for.
I agree. It's been a life-changing experience for me. I just celebrated my 4-year anniversary on the 2nd of this month.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And it has been absolutely a pleasure working with CIS of Mid-America. So very stoked to be part of the team.
Yeah, we have a great culture. And one of the things that people, staff, remark to me about all the time is how remarkable our culture is for them. That they often say things like, I've never worked any place like this, that's so supportive, that has such a positive environment. And of course, those kinds of things make me very proud.
Yeah. And they should. I mean, because it's very, very true. It's set the bar so high that I don't know how any other organization that I could work for would compare with it. So,
well, excellent. Part of our plan.
Yes. So we've talked about your favorite part of working with CIS of Mid-America. What would you say is one of the challenges of working in this organization?
I think one of the challenges is that the need is so great. And so consequently, we're extremely focused on how best to help meet need. And so we have an amazing model and we have compelling need. And how do we get services to as many of these kids and families as possible? And how do we meet them at their point of greatest need? And how do we best serve those populations who have extreme need? And by that, I'm thinking in particular, you know, when you look at educational and life outcome data, at human service data, you know, there are particular populations, even within our overall at-risk population, that have significant needs, such as migrant students or students who are involved in the foster or juvenile justice systems. And so how can we best serve these kids that are facing extraordinarily difficult circumstances? Mm-hmm. I'd say for me, the most effective way to meet the needs of those that we feel called to serve is the greatest challenge.
But, you know, I think that that actually says a lot about you and what brought you to this organization, is because that is something that is very front and center within your heart and your focus. And probably even your values that you would, that you bring to work every day.
Thanks. I totally agree. It is, you know, funding, good grief. Anybody in the nonprofit arena knows that funding is a perennial challenge.
Right.
But it's always going to be with us. And at the end of the day, all the funding in the world is not effective if the services aren't as effective as they can be. And that's why ultimately it's the quest for the most effective services possible is always first with me.
Yeah. But I do think that's something that we do really well. And not to like, you know, just make this a whole big giant commercial for communities and the schools. But if anyone is interested in learning more about communities and schools, please check out our website at cismidamerica.org. So we are going to ask Melissa a couple more questions just to get a little bit more input about her personal views on things. And then we will move into the letter portion of our podcast. So, Melissa, what would you say is your definition of success?
My definition of success really centers around fullness. And so, to me, any endeavor, no matter who we are, if we have functioned within that endeavor, if we have embraced within that endeavor, if we have impacted as a result of that endeavor, with fullness, meaning to the best of our ability, with every resource possible, with the best possible outcomes for whatever it is that we're trying to do, if we have given it our fullest, then to me, that is success. So, you know, there are, of course, any number of inequities in our world, any number of resources, all kinds of differing access to resources. And I don't measure success necessarily in what was attained. I measure success in what was given, what was tried, what was fought for. That to me is success.
I love that. And I think that the students who hear that, because I'm hoping that students will listen to this podcast, as well as teachers and parents and staff members that work with us or people that work in similar organizations, you know, social workers will hear that and take that to heart. Because I feel like it's something that really anybody can benefit from making part of their own definition of success, that it's not just, you know, making $1 million a year or having, you know, this many cars, that it's something that's outside of that box definition. So, yeah. So thank you for sharing that. I wanted to kind of wrap this up with one more question. What is one piece of advice that you would give to somebody who is interested in starting a career with a nonprofit organization?
That's interesting. Well, I would say, first of all, really learn as much as you can about the nonprofit sector, or what I like to think of as the for impact sector, because there are a lot of different kinds of nonprofits out there. So what is it that resonates for you? You know, is it animal welfare? Is it access to higher education? Is it basic needs like food and housing? Figure out what it is that really appeals to you, and then learn about the nonprofit sector as a whole. Think about your talents. What are your skill sets? If you're a good writer, you know, certainly breaking into this arena as a grant writer was an incredible opportunity, you know, in my life. But really find out what it is that's going to drive you, and then start following the organizations in your area for openings, and then start pursuing them. And I would also say, you know, don't wait for the job opening. Call the organization and say, I'm considering a nonprofit career in this field, and I'm wondering if anyone there would give me an hour of their time to talk to me. I think most of the time, because, you know, in the nonprofit arena, a lot of us are helpers anyway, I think you will find people that would be happy to talk to you about the sector and their particular place in it. I know that I get these calls fairly regularly, and I never, never say no. That in itself is a great opportunity. So that would be my advice on how to start.
All right. I hope you guys are listening, because that is some excellent advice. We are going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with a second serving of Letters from the Lunchroom. So stay tuned. Welcome back. As mentioned earlier, all of our guests are asked to write a letter to the students that we serve. The only guideline that they were given is that it is to come from the heart. Melissa, are you ready to share your letter?
I am. Dear amazing, valuable, gifted, beautiful CIS students, the first thing I want to say is yay you. Just being a CIS student says that you and others around you know you matter, and that you have a lot to offer, and that you're taking steps to make sure your life can be everything you want it to be, even things you can't imagine right now. I feel like I could talk to you for hours, telling you stories about how so many of us have experienced life and hope and despair and joy and abuse and beauty and survival and finally flourishing because and in spite of all of it. You would understand, because you have your stories too. Sometimes our stories help us understand the world and ourselves. Sometimes our stories mislead us into believing the world has forgotten us or doesn't care. But I promise you that you are most definitely not forgotten. You are very definitely thought of and cared about and loved. With a few minutes to give you some life advice, here's what I've got. Understand that the very same life can be both awful and beautiful. The trick is not to expect only awfulness or only beauty. There's a lot of ordinary too, and that's good because you can rest up during the ordinary times. Both the awful and the beautiful times can take a lot of energy. If you work toward making the majority of your life be ordinary and beautiful, you'll have a good life. Sometimes we have no control over the things that make life awful or beautiful. And sometimes our choices are what make the difference between awful and ordinary or beautiful. Speaking of choices, when you don't know what to do, choose love. Choose to be kind. Choose the thing that seems to be the closest to love and kindness and goodness and light. That doesn't mean you don't use your voice or that you give up your dignity or your power. It means you use your voice and your strength from a place of love and light. Choices that come from our small, mean places just keep cycles of negativity and hate going, and we are way better than that. Also, read. Reading has taught me a lot about how to live life. I hope you are or will become readers too. If reading isn't your jam, then I hope you'll be a listener. There are a lot of important things that a lot of people have to share with us. When things are tough, remember what Mr. Rogers said. Look for the helpers. There really are helpers everywhere. Look for them and be brave enough to say, I need you. If you think someone's a helper, but they don't help you, don't give up on the helpers. Just find the next one. Find some things you're interested in and do them. If you're a little one and you like to color, then color. Do you like to run? Then run. Have you wondered what it would be like to grow a plant? Try it. Trying out things helps you learn about yourself and your talents. Practicing them makes you better at them. Find someone who knows about what you're interested in. Maybe they're at school or in your neighborhood or at the library or on the internet. You can't even imagine some of the crazy good things that can come from figuring out what you're interested in and good at. be grateful for something every day. Find something you can be thankful for, even if the only thing you can find that day is that the sky is pretty, or you have a friend, or that tomorrow will be a new day. If you're feeling down right now, I want you to know and remember that it gets better. If things are going great, I want you to know and remember that it can get even better. We need you, CIS kids. You have a place in this world, an important place. We need your perspective, your heart, your vision for a just and better world. I am so excited about our future when I think of you in it, thriving, being your best self, living a life of possibility and excitement and fullness. It takes my breath away to think of who you can be. Believe in yourself. Dream big. Dream bigger. Find the helpers. Believe in life. Believe that you can help change the world, because you can. You can. One of the greatest gifts of my life is that I get to work to help you learn all these things. And I get to work with a whole lot of people doing the same work. We see you. We hear you. You matter. You matter. You matter. With love from Melissa, a kid who was sad and didn't much believe in life, and who became a grown-up who is amazed every single day at how wonderful life has turned out.
Wow. I'll just say wow. Thank you, Melissa. So whenever you read that letter on the air, what is it that you feel?
Oh, well, goodness. It's, you know, a lot of us have stories. And I often think that in the work that we do to bring healing to our world, because essentially that's what we're doing, we're trying to bring healing to our world. I think that so many of us are still working to heal ourselves, to heal the child we were, or to heal the children we saw. And I think that we are talking to ourselves in so many ways. Surely all of us have known, no matter our station in life, no matter the circumstances we've grown up in or find ourselves in now, we have all found ourselves in times that threatened to overtake us, in times of life that maybe did, in fact, overtake us or overwhelm us. And when we come out on the other side of those, we know what we wished we had heard, or we know what we did hear from people just like us. And so when I read this, I think about me as a child. I think about all the grown-ups who are basically CIS kids 20 or 30 or 40 years later. I think about the kids today who are struggling with things that we as adults find daunting, and yet we're expecting kids to somehow not be aware of them or just handle them. And it's what I feel we all need to remind ourselves of every day. We're not alone. There is always hope. It gets better. You matter. Those are the things I feel when I read it.
So, you know, as I listen to you read this letter, you obviously are pulling out these pieces of advice that come from your own personal life experiences. And they're excellent pieces of advice. And you end your letter with love from Melissa, a kid who was sad and didn't much believe in life, and who became a grown-up who is amazed every single day at how wonderful life has turned out. So I'm curious, was there somebody, whenever you were going to school, that sort of stood out and played that role of a support person for you?
Unfortunately, no. There was not someone that I would term a proactive adult until I was adult, until I was an adult. That said, better late than never, of course. And I had three people who, whether or not they viewed themselves as mentors or life changers, that was certainly their impact in my life as I was an adult and trying to make my way. And so what I've often thought about in my adulthood, when I have seen the profound impact that these three people had on me, I have thought, how different might my life have been earlier had I had these three champions when I was younger? And so that is one of the reasons that I am so committed to working with kids, because the younger we are when these helpers, these mentors, these life changers are in our lives, the better. We waste a lot less time being broken and hurt and directionless and not certain about where we fit in the world. And if we can help kids navigate those waters while they're still in schools, so that when they graduate from school, they know, they've at least got an idea about their positive next steps, and they've got a much greater sense of their place, their important place in this world, then everything about our world is better.
That's so true. That is so true. And I really loved that part of your letter when you talked about how we need the CIS kids, because we do. And I know that we need them because we believe in who they are and who they will be, and the really important impact that they make in this world and that they will make as they become adults and go out into their jobs and become educators and have families. And I know that it's because of our belief in those kids is why we need them.
Absolutely. And young people are often the catalyst for very needed change. And so we need our young people to be ready and prepared and excited about being that catalyst for change.
So I want to ask you one more question. Knowing the amazing, you know, just like total boss goals figure that you've become in your life, what advice, if you could take a time machine and go back to your younger self, what advice would you give to that little girl?
I would tell her to ignore everything that she thought she heard the external world telling her, and to hang on to that kernel of self-knowledge and grow it, which for me just would have meant you're getting a lot of messages about who you are, and inside you know they're not true, so don't give them any of your time, attention, or energy. Because what I did was, even though I hung on to that kernel of truth in myself, I gave the external voices way, way, way too much time and energy and attention. And it really sidetracked me for a long time.
So be true to yourself. Be authentic.
Be true to yourself. Mm-hmm. Be authentic.
Yep. And I think that whenever you and I were talking earlier, you know, off the podcast, off the record, you even said something to me. You said, don't even waste your energy on that. And it was in the same kind of aspect. I mean, I think that's excellent advice. And I can definitely see you telling your younger self that, because I think that is sort of like one of your sort of life things that you do every day, is choosing where to put your energy and where not to. And I think that's actually, I think that's one of the things that's made you so successful, that you're really good at that.
Thank you. I will certainly take some credit for trying hard to be who I need to be and grow in the ways I need to grow. And I will also acknowledge some extraordinarily good fortune in my life also.
And that is totally fine and also honest. So, Okay, Melissa. Well, I think that was a very great first episode. I want to thank you again so much for talking with us today and for sharing your extremely inspirational, heartfelt letter. I'm just so excited to see what happens with this podcast.
Me too. And thanks so much for having me. It's been a real privilege.
That's all for this episode of Letters from the Lunchroom. All episodes, including Melissa's letter, can be found on the CIS of MidAmerica website at cismidamerica.org. I'm your host, Victoria Partridge, and until next time, class is dismissed.